back in on Canuck Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintech studio. This hour of Canuck Central brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. A fast lunch doesn't have to mean fast food. Satisfy your midday cravings by choosing a main, side, and drink for only $15 served in 20 minutes or less. I can't escape the visual of Rick Tocchet and Elias Pettersson in Sweden. Strolling through the streets of Stockholm, having an espresso and maybe doing some sneaker shopping or something like that.
Yeah, just kind of chilling.
Maybe going on a boat ride like he did with Elliot Friedman.
Having an espresso.
Yeah.
A Swedish espresso.
Yeah. They drink espresso in Sweden.
They drink coffee in Sweden. Okay.
See the Swedish team? The fans stormed the ice after they got promotion this weekend.
Yeah,
it was great.
People get excited. Djurgården, man.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. I was a big Djurgården fan in Sweden. So,
oh, you were?
It's a very prestigious club. Has fallen on some hard times.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, that's enough about Swedish football teams and hockey teams. Let's get into our next guest. It is John Garrett, color commentator with Sportsnet. What's happening, Cheech? How you doing?
I love that. I'm following Swedish soccer, football and Swedish hockey teams, and I'm doing the Winnipeg-St. Louis series, and you guys just say, oh, okay, yeah, you guys have nothing to talk about? Why are you talking about that?
But yeah.
Everything is going on in Vancouver, and you're giving me, oh yeah, I'll follow Swedish soccer. Yeah. Here comes Cheech.
Yeah, we're trying to maintain a positive attitude right now, Cheech, because I got to say, listeners right now, they aren't very optimistic about the future of the Vancouver Canucks after Rick Tocchet has decided to leave.
Yeah, I don't think the people in Vancouver realize that for a coach in Vancouver, it's a really different situation. It's a hard situation, and not just because the team's not playing well, but and I was talking to Bick last week about all these other teams. Seattle, it's the Mariners, the Seahawks, and Philly, it's the Phillies and the Eagles, and Pittsburgh, it's the Steelers and the Pirates, and all the hockey teams are at least third level, and in a lot of those states, well, look at Seattle, look at Washington, look at those college teams in Washington. And because Vancouver, it is the sport and it is the team. And now how many podcasts are there? There's like eight podcasts in Vancouver. And you know Rick, and I know Rick. And how many times did Adam Foote do post-game interviews or game day skate interviews or day off interviews? Rick didn't want to, but he felt he had to do those interviews himself. And day after day after day, it's a grind. It's a grind, especially if the team's not doing well. And there's so many options out there now. So many teams are looking for head coaches that I'm sure Rick looked at it and said, okay, you know, is it really worth my mental health, and everybody's using that term now, to stay in Vancouver? And what are my chances of winning? And all those things play into it, but I really think that people have to understand that Rick and it's a hard choice because you get to know the guys and the training staff and the management and the media. You're part of it. And yet you say, okay, would I be better off going someplace else? And I'm sure that's what Rick has decided. Okay, it's probably better that I go someplace else. And then now the Canucks have to decide who's going to come in and be the guy. And there's so many options out there, but there's so many other teams that are looking for a head coach that now you get down to the point where you say, okay, which one of the secondary guys, and it probably will be one of the secondary guys, that you get.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as far as everything that's gone on with this team this entire season, it's been a very dramatic year. Jay in the text inbox says, you know, you guys are really embracing the drama today, but this team has given a lot of content over the past 9 months. It just seems like it's one dramatic turn after another, right? Like, because we thought, okay, maybe the JT Pedersen thing was overstated by the media a little bit. Rutherford came out and did his interview with Gary Mason. A few days later, JT gets traded. I mean, the drama this year has not been manufactured. It seems to be real around every corner this year.
Well, it is. It is. And I mean, the Thatcher injury to start, and then the JT Elias thing, and the fact that they weren't playing real well, and you got to the trading deadline, and the Brock Besser stuff, and Pia Suter, and you just... It really is, and you bring in some players that for the future, and like Marcus Pedersen, D. Pedersen, those guys, and you're thinking, okay, for the future, those are going to be good guys, and then you say, okay, how do we fill in to replace Brock and to replace JT, and who's Elias going to play with, and you hope Elias comes back and gets. I'm a believer in Elias. I really think Elias can do it. And I think that he has to realize that there comes a time in your career where you have to say, okay, am I just going to be okay, or am I going to be a star? And he has the potential to be a star. And if he's just going to be okay, that's not going to be good enough for the Vancouver Canucks. And they'll eventually try and get rid of him. But I look at it and now with the coaching thing available, and I say, well, okay, which one, is there going to be anybody out there that is looking for the Vancouver job? And there's lots of coaches that will be out there looking for jobs, but who's going to want to come to Vancouver? And in my opinion, what the Canucks should do is look at all the assistant coaches throughout the league who have been head coaches. Mm. And you look at, okay, there's Kirk Muller in Washington. Would he be a fit? John Stevens from Vegas, would he be a fit? Jeff Blashill's been in Tampa Bay and under John Cooper for so long, and they've won so many times. Would he be a fit? And John McClain, he was a head coach in Jersey when they were good. Trent Yanni has been a head coach. And you go up and down the list of all the guys who are assistant coaches now in the NHL. And I think that's where the Canucks are going to end up. Is that they're going to have to pick one of those guys and pick somebody that's going to come in and say, okay, here's what I got, and I'm going to try and keep them consistent and make them play every game, like Jim Hiller did in Los Angeles. And Los Angeles was a better team, naturally. But the way Los Angeles played every game this year, allow 20 shots or fewer and do all the things that Los Angeles did. I thought Hiller did a great job there. And you go around the league and the teams that are really successful and look at their coaches, and I think that's the Canucks have to say, well, okay, which one of these guys has the potential to be that kind of coach that can get our team back on track and not just be a defensive team, but be a team where Elias can score some goals and where the top two lines can score some goals and yet we're good defensively. And I think that's the thing that is really going to be a big question for the Canucks.
Yeah, and I know like so much of the conversation is around Quinn Hughes and how are you going to convince him to stay long-term in Vancouver. And ultimately, Cheech, I guess the best way to do that is, you know, go through your process, try to put the best team and the best coach on the ice next year. And if you guys are good, hopefully that'll be enough to convince Quinn Hughes to stay long-term.
Well, hopefully,
yeah.
Hopefully the team will be good enough that if Quinn Hughes decides to say, okay, I'd like to play with my brothers or I'd like to go away, that you can replace him with, okay, you're never going to replace Quinn Hughes.
Yeah.
Don't ever think that that's what I'm saying here. But you have to get to the point where you say, okay, we can have a guy that comes in and is a good defenseman, but not a great defenseman, and it won't matter because we've got five other guys who are pretty good. And then the team structure, you look at Winnipeg, this year, President's Trophy, all that kind of stuff. Okay, they got Josh Morrissey. But after that, who have they got? Dylan DeMello, Neil Pionk, Luke Shen, Logan Stanley, Dylan DeMello, or Dylan Sandberg. Which one of those guys is a real great defenseman? None of them. And yet the team structure makes it look like they're all pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And is Morrissey as good as Quinn Hughes? No. But their team, as a team, has played very well all season long.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what this comes down to, and it's funny because last year everything management touched came out to gold, right? Like every signing worked out, every trade worked out, Tocchet, the hire worked out, a very successful season. And they had some, you know, successful decisions this year in free agency, but also some that didn't work out. And obviously everything that's kind of gone on. How much confidence should fans have in Rutherford and management getting this right?
Well, you have to. You have to, and I think that you look at Jimmy's history, and you can't say, okay, the guy goes to Carolina, and sure, they had all those down years, and Paul Maurice for all those years couldn't make the playoffs, and then they make plus. He won a Stanley Cup in Carolina. Then he goes to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's a good team. They go along, and sure enough, they won another Stanley Cup. So, you can say it's a down time and everything, but Jimmy's record and his history is very successful. So you just have to buy in and trust. And I think that's the thing that the Canucks faithful has to say, well, okay, it's just worked out that way. And the Rick decision and those kind of things, they had Rick here, they offered him a contract, he decided to go someplace else. That's not their fault. That's just the way it worked out. And I, the JT thing, was that their fault? Not likely. Not likely. It was just two personalities clashing from the time they started. From the time Elias came into the team and JT's there, and the personalities just didn't work out. And I think that's the thing that you remember when the Sedins first came and Todd Bertuzzi and Marcus Naslin, and they didn't get along, and Todd was kind of condescending to the Sedins. But then once they realized that Todd and Marcus, that Henrik and Daniel were the future, then it worked out. And I think that's one of the things that you just have to say, okay, times have changed, and now Elias has to realize that he has to be the star.
John Garrett, our guest, and Cheech, you're covering the Jets and Blues series tied up at two going back to Winnipeg. And the biggest story of this series right now is Connor Hellebuck. What are you seeing in the guy who's probably going to win the Vezina right now, but can't make enough saves in the playoffs?
I know. Well, you look around, pick the three Vezina goalies. Okay,
yeah.
Look at the three Vezina goalies. All of them are going to be out the first round.
Could be. Could be that way, yeah.
Oh, I know. But Connor, obviously it's a mental thing with him because you look at his playoff road games in the last, what is it, 8 or 10 or whatever. He's got a goals against a 6 or something like that. He has to try and overcome it. He's been so good in the regular season, and you hope that he can find a way to get his game and get his head. And I think that's all that it is with him, is his head back where he can play not only at home and play really well, but play on the road and play really well. But you know one thing that really bugs me? And I know any goaltender, any high school goaltender out there, any college goaltender out there, any junior goaltender out there, and I was talking to a junior goaltender today from Medicine Hat, and I said to him, I said, well, you know, when you got the hook, did you sit on the bench? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm part of the team. I used to go in the dressing room, get a baseball hat, and come back and sit on the bench. Connor Hellebuck, last two games in St. Louis, got the hook in both games. Did he come back and sit on the bench? No. No. He went and sat in the dressing room. Are you part of the team? And to me, that is just a complete disrespect for every other player that you're playing with, that you won't come back and sit there and be part of it and be part of the, okay, you're getting embarrassed, whatever. You're going to be part of it because you were probably the main part they got embarrassed, but still you're going to be part of it. If a defenseman gets benched or a forward gets benched, like JT Miller this year when he got benched in the third period in that one game, could he just go and sit in the dressing room and say, okay, I had a bad game and I'm pouting? And no. And I really think that, and a couple of goalies have called me who are now announcing and said the same thing, that they just couldn't believe that he did that twice in a row. And he might say, well, okay, that's my thing. Well, okay, that's your thing, but it shouldn't be your thing. That's to me, is just a total disrespect for your teammates.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. And I think when you look at the Jets and how good they were in the regular season, but also I think it shows you the pressures and the emotions of the playoffs, because at times they've had the breakdowns too defensively, which is uncharacteristic for a team like that. But it also just shows you how in pressure in these playoff games, you are going to have moments where things do fall apart. And it just seems like the Jets right now have been on the wrong side of those things too often.
Oh, I know. And give St. Louis credit. I mean, St. Louis went into the end of the season where they were the hottest team in the NHL after the Four Nations Cup. They were the best team in the NHL. They've won 14, maybe 15 games now after the last game in a row at home. They are a very, very good team. They're big. They're strong. They've got a good mix of young guys and old guys. And if Parayko and Fowler are on the top of their game, which they were in the games in St. Louis, then those two are probably the best pair in the series. And I don't care who Josh Morrissey's playing with. So I think that you have to realize that St. Louis is a really good team, and so is Winnipeg. And it's like Dallas and Colorado. And you say, okay, who's going to win that series? Well, probably Dallas now, but who knows?
Yeah, and with the other part of this series, it's like it's so clear, especially in the playoffs, and this is always a big thing, but you got to win your net front battles. And right now, St. Louis is doing that, right? And
yeah,
if you clean up a little bit of that and let Connor Hellebuck see the puck a little bit more often, maybe he's got a better chance to make some of those saves.
Yeah, and Gabe Vilardi is going to be back in for the next game, and he is a good net front presence for the Winnipeg Jets. He's a big guy, and he's hard to move. But yeah, you saw in like the goal that went off Pionk. You know, if he clears the guy a little sooner, then it's not going to go off him and go in. And the long lob ball, tip ball that to me was the real turning point in that game, the third game. The Jets came out in the first period and dominated, absolutely dominated. The shots were like 15-4. And yet the last minute of play in the period, you got to scrum along the boards. You got three guys on the boards. They got three guys on the boards. It's the last minute of the period. Take the icing if you have to, but dig the puck out and get it down, or try and freeze it for the last 30 seconds. Do whatever you want, but kill the last 30 seconds and make sure that you're going into the dressing room 1-0. I think that game would have been completely different had they not given up that first goal in the last minute of the first period. But instead it turned around and the fans were into it. The Blues were into it, and Harner Ryan and I were just calling Blues goals from there on in.
Well, I just have one more, and it's the big question I have before we let you go. Better burgers, St. Louis or Winnipeg?
Oh, you want to know what? in Enterprise Arena, and Shorty will back me up on this, there's a Shake Shack. Inside the rink.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong if there's a Shake Shack inside the rink. So I got to go with St. Louis.
Like, yeah. Shake Shack's number one for you, right? Like, when you rank all the burger places, like, Shake Shack's number one.
Oh, it is. It is so good. It is so good. There's no sesame seeds on the bun. They don't try and overdo it. You don't have to pick the seeds out of your false teeth or anything. Shake Shack is by far the best.
I mean, I know they got one in Toronto. Like, when are we getting one out here, Cheech? Like, come on.
It's
about time we got our Shake Shack here.
I got a Five Guys that's about 10 blocks from me, so I go to Five Guys once in a while. But I have to ask for two bottom buns because they put sesame seeds on the buns. drives me crazy. Oh, is that an allergy thing? No, it's not. I don't want to see my teeth.
Well, Cheech, if our inbox is any indication, we miss hearing from you, so it's been good to catch up.
It's always nice to talk to you guys, too.
Thanks for this, Cheech.
No problem.
I love it. I love it. No problem. Bang.
Was he?
Couldn't wait. Yeah, I missed it too. Bang.
Was he hitting the end? Like, was he hitting hang up as he was? No problem.
It sounded like it was still like by his mouth.
I've never heard it go to dial tone that quickly in my entire life. It was incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Ah, that was legendary.
All right. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. Andrew, man, do I miss Cheech on Canucks broadcasts. another text here from Ryan saying, miss Cheech on the call. Can you tell him we all miss him? Well, we did. And then he hung up right away.
I miss you guys too. Bye.
But you can hear Cheech on the Canucks, or sorry, not the Canucks because they're not in the playoffs. The Jets and Blues call, which that series will resume tomorrow in Winnipeg. Series tied up at 2 apiece. A lot going on with the Canucks, and Harmon Dial is going to join us, and a lot of commentary here coming in. You know, this one says, well, if you hire Manny Malholtra, you'll just be looking for another new head coach pretty soon. I mean, it's the Canucks. You're looking for a new head coach, what, every 2 years, it seems like. Yeah. It's been 4 years, four head coaches. Although Jim Rutherford was quick to point out that he's only hired one of those coaches that have been fired over the last 4 years.
Yeah, he was quick to remind. He's like,
he's fired. Well, he hasn't fired two of them. He's they let go of Bruce, but he didn't hire Bruce technically. And his only hire was Rick Tocchet.
No, I mentioned a couple guys have had tenure, Pat and Elaine.
Yeah.
And that's it.
That's kind of like par for the course, though, around the NHL.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. It's hard to find guys that can stay there a long time. But that's what he said, right? So he said, you know, there has been a lot of turnover in Vancouver, but he admitted, like, it's going to be tough. Your fourth head coach in 4 years. Now, obviously, you mentioned there's been a lot of turnover on the roster, but it's obviously not what they wanted.
Yeah.
To have to start over with a new head coach all of a sudden.
So Cheech mentioned, you know, looking through some of the assistants that have coached before in the NHL. Aside from Manny Malholtra and Peter Laviolette and some of those names, is there anybody that comes to mind for you as potential guys to be the next coach of the Vancouver Canucks?
One guy I wonder about in general who's been getting a lot of buzz around the league is Jeff Halpern with Tampa.
Yeah.
He's had some tenure as well now, and he's been around, and he's very well thought of. And I think he was at least interviewed for an opening last year, too. I think he's an interesting kind of guy to keep an eye on. I've heard Sylvain Lefebvre's name been out. Mm-hmm. Now, he's not in Vancouver. I mean, like, as a guy who's an assistant, who's an up-and-comer, kind of. So I think he's a guy. Now, I'm sure when you dig through guys, you're always going to find some warts. So I do think there are a couple of assistants. And he's a guy who has a lot of experience.
Right.
Now, there was also something that happened with him during the COVID year when he left the Blue Jackets because he didn't want to get vaccinated.
Right.
And I'm not saying that's just stopping him from getting a job or not. I'm just saying it's one of those things that, depending on the market, you kind of wonder about. But those are the couple of names as assistants who are very well thought of right now and people can see getting opportunities somewhere, right? So I think that's going to be really fascinating to watch. I'm not sure how that applies to Vancouver.
Yeah.
But there are a couple of assistants. For all this talk about, you know, the retreads and all this, like, there are a few other guys out there that might get looks that people don't expect.
Lefebvre, currently an assistant with the Florida Panthers. Canucks... probably will take some time here. We did get a text, you know, will they wait till after the draft or free agency? Jim Rutherford said today that they'd like to get it sorted soon so that the head coach can be a part of the process of figuring out the types of players they want to acquire to help out this team next year.
Yeah, and if you look at a couple of guys, if you look at, like, who are the most likely candidates, I mean, Manny is a big guy. You mentioned he's, you know,
he's already on the short list, yes.
Would Jay Woodcroft fit on that short list?
Had a pretty pretty steep decline in Edmonton, but he's been working to get back into the game. You've heard his name start to pop up a little bit more here lately.
Yeah, and he's been interviewed, and he kind of fits the traditional price range.
Yeah.
Because he's not going to be a coach who's going to be getting $4 to $5 million. It'll be more the average salary or maybe even slightly below that. It won't be a big number, right? But I wonder about him too, because he's a guy that people do think highly of.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't get a chance to get the bigger names, and if you don't think Manny's quite ready, but you want somebody with some experience, would a guy who coached McDavid be of interest to them at all? You wonder about a guy like Woodcroft.
It's definitely a name to keep an eye on, and probably one that's on the Canucks shortlist once they get to figuring it out. But they are still a little bit in shock from Rick Tocchet saying he is not long for Vancouver.
For sure. And I see people texting in and saying that, you know, this management team shouldn't be allowed to hire another coach and a player. And that's all fine and good. You can have that opinion. Like, it's and Rutherford took some responsibility today. But the truth is, they're not getting fired.
Yeah.
They are hiring the next head coach.
Yes.
Like, that is happening. Now, again, we'll see what happens over the next little while here. I'm not saying they're going to stay here forever, but you guys can criticize management. It's completely fair. But they're not getting fired, I don't think.
Yeah.
Within the next week or two?
It's not happening. And they will be tasked with bringing in the next head coach. And maybe that will be, you know, their last dance. If it doesn't work out then maybe you're looking to replace all of it. But for now, they are getting a chance to hire their next head coach. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Coming up, Harmon Dial of The Athletic is going to join us in hour number two of Canuck Central.
It's always nice to talk to you guys, too.
Thanks for this, Cheech.
No problem.
I love it. No problem. Bang.
Talking all Canucks all the time. It's Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Number two, Canucks Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. This hour of Canucks Central is brought to you by BC Liquor. Until May 31st, save $3 on Vintage Ink Whiskey Barrel Aged Red and $5 off Empress 1908 Gin. Visit your nearest BC Liquor location today and, of course, enjoy responsibly. Let's bring in our next guest. From The Athletic, it is Harmon Dial. What's happening, Harm? How are you?
Doing well, guys. How are you?
We are trying to give logic and rational takes on where the Canucks are headed this offseason, but it's getting harder and harder every day.
Yeah, big picture.
It's a tough spot right now, Harm.
I mean, I understand the angst and the concern. I mean, the head coach that this management group loves and that Quinn Hughes wanted back essentially looked at the state of the organization and said it's time for a change. Your $11.6 million number one center is coming off a 45-point season. You're reportedly in a contract stalemate with your top prospect, Tom Willander, over Schedule A bonuses. There's been zero progress on a practice facility. And the most important of all, you've got 12 to 18 months to execute a pretty dramatic turnaround to convince Quinn Hughes to extend here. So I understand why the market is a bit worried about the state of the franchise right now.
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand, right? And the ironic thing throughout all of this year, and it's one of those things that the situation is not perfect by any means, right? But you can actually look at, you know, you have Quinn Hughes, and as much as Pettersson struggled, you have a player like him, you have a couple goalies, you have some prospects coming through the ranks, you have some things that if you're patient and play it slow here the next few years, you could build something. But you have an existential question with Quinn Hughes long term, and you don't know if he's going to be here long term. And now you have other questions about how do you maintain competing, and do you have to do something that's going to be detrimental to your team long term because you're trying to keep Quinn Hughes? And it's funny because you can actually look at this team and say there is some natural positive regression going to next year for some players, and they could be a decent team that are a couple moves away. But it just seems like the timeline is so short to get all that done, whereas you can't just look at it and say, well, in a few years, they'll be good because they have these pieces.
Absolutely. And the problem is they've sort of burned a lot of their runway because they didn't build properly in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
When they first started to find some success, and then obviously towards the tail end of the Benning regime, what killed them was them really starting with the OEL trade. sort of instead of looking at that as, okay, this is 1 year, let's just eat the pain. And then we're going to have all this cap space coming off the books. Quinn and Pettersson are still really young. JT's still in the heart of his prime. Brock's still relatively young. Demko's still relatively young. When they should have been patient, they were short-sighted. They searched for the shortcut, and they went, well, we can't live with having the 1 year left of Roussel, Beagle, Eriksson, and took this sort of reckless bet on all of Ekman-Larsson, which has cost them in cap flexibility. It cost them potentially a young piece like Dylan Gunther. And I think big picture, this organization just never built properly. I mean, going back to even the position that this management group inherited, the cap was a mess. They didn't have that next wave of prospects coming because the Benning regime had never accumulated enough draft picks and prospects. And so when this management group took over, and I'm obviously not absolving them of blame, but their task was sort of, they're trying to win, but they're also trying to rebuild the prospect pool, and they're also trying to fix the cap situation. It's just too many fires to be putting out at once. And ultimately, they're just paying the price for years, in my opinion, of mismanagement.
Yeah, the bills are coming due right now, and that's kind of what it feels like for the Vancouver Canucks.
And I think the most frustrating part is, like, they were kind of, they still, like Rutherford mentioned, they kind of got on track last year, and you could rationalize spending the assets and the moves and expediting it because you made a push last year, but the fact that that was cut off is what really hurts you. There's no progression anymore.
Yeah, and it's just, it's so wild, too, the manner in which this team lost so many essentially top line difference makers. I mean, who could have imagined that Pettersson would have fallen off the map this dramatically? Who would have imagined 18 months ago that we'd be talking about Thatcher Demko as an injury prone goaltender that you potentially may not ever really be able to rely on? I mean, the guy literally sustained last year an injury that no NHL goalie has ever experienced. Like, how often does that happen? How can you predict that? And then the feud between JT Miller and Elias Pettersson, and obviously those two guys had a previous history of not always getting along, but you thought based off last season that, okay, these guys can coexist. And so for that to resurface as well, the blue line wasn't constructed in a very good way at the start of the season. It's just all of these things sort of piled up, and even further down the lineup, I mean, Dakota Joshua's cancer diagnosis, and think about how impactful he was. Where last season that was one of the best third lines in the NHL. You miss a key driver like that in the middle of your lineup. In terms of him, understandably shaking off the rust this season. Even somebody like Carson Soucy, who last year broke out as the second pair shutdown stud, essentially, and then through the first 6 weeks of the season, he was almost unplayable. Just all of these things going wrong at once. Yes, some of it is out of management's control, but some of it is also a function of everything went so well for them last year, including the injury luck, the PDO bender they were on, that they needed to find a way to add more talent to sustain the success that they had last year. And instead, they've essentially just been losing talent, or more prevalently, the pieces that they have become much worse versions of themselves.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder where this is headed, especially with the clock clicking down on Quinn Hughes. So I guess by the end of the season, there was sort of a mixed reaction to the Wards, the job that Rick Tocchet had been doing. Now, I feel like us here on the show and most of the media in general didn't really have a problem with the job that Tocchet was doing, and put it down more on personnel for the roster as to the offensive struggles of the team. Is that, how do you look at what they need from a head coach moving forward? Is it somebody still based in heavy structure as Tocchet was, or do they need somebody who's going to let the boys play a little bit more?
The tough task is they essentially need to find a way to maintain the structural improvements that Tockett was able to instill and find a way to add offense on top of that, which isn't easy. I don't think it's as simple as bringing in a head coach who is going to open things up and that all of a sudden it's going to fix your two-way issues, because what I worry about with this group, especially with some of the habits that they had before Tockett came in, is if you give some of these guys a green light to make more plays through the neutral zone, to be more creative, how much of a cost does it come at defensively? And I think when you just look at the pieces you have on the roster right now, your blue line is a strength. Your goaltending, if Demko can stay healthy, is a strength, especially because you've also got Lankanen. You almost don't have a team that's equipped to play this like high octane offensive style anyway. Mm. So you kind of have to, in my mind, bring in a head coach who can maintain the defensive gains that this group has shown over the last couple of seasons. And then the really tricky part is how do you add offense on top of that? And honestly, the adding offense on top of that part, that's mostly management's job in my mind. They just need to graft more elite skill. Mm-hmm. But to me, I think from what you need in a coach, just looking at the composition of this team, how your strengths are on the back end and in goal, this is probably a team that's going to have to stick towards more of a low event style, maybe not as extreme ideally as it was this past season. But I don't think you're bringing in a coach that's automatically going to flip a 180 and that they should be leaning towards a high octane, open it up, free roaming type of offensive style.
Well, and given the way they responded to Bruce's style, it's very clear that structure matters to them in a great deal and that they want to have that as an organizational identity. So I think that's going to remain. And the question is, which coach best brings that's available to them? We know he mentioned Manny, and obviously there's alignment in how they play and their systems with what they're doing with the big club this year. So there's an easy fit in that sense. So now the question is he ready for it? And the rest kind of comes down to coaches available. And if you look at a realistic option, a guy like Jay Woodcroft, would he fit what the Canucks need, or do you think he's somebody that would be an awkward fit in Vancouver?
Yeah, that's a name that, I'll be honest, the experienced head coaches that are already sort of out there, like the Derek Lalonde's, Peter Laviolette's, a lot of those guys don't appeal to me. It's not an exciting crop of free agent coaches in terms of who's already done it at the NHL level. But in having said that, Woodcroft is one of those coaches I would be interested in taking a deeper look at, because obviously it ended poorly with him in Edmonton, but look at the situation that he originally inherited. Dave Tippett had been the previous head coach. They were on the verge of potentially missing the playoffs in that 2021-22 season. They were right on the fringes of a wild card spot, if I believe, barely clinging on. Woodcroft came in. They immediately went on a tear in the second half. That first year, they made the Western Conference final despite not having the most talented roster. The following year, they had a 50-win season and lost in the second round to the Vegas Golden Knights. The Golden Knights won the Stanley Cup that year. There's no shame in that type of result. And then obviously, at the start of last season, they had a brutal start, brutal 6 to 8 weeks. And of course that led to his firing, but how much of that was related to just awful goaltending? And despite them controlling shots and chances relatively well, they weren't getting the bounces in terms of shooting percentage either. So even though it ended poorly with him in Edmonton, his overall body of work with the Oilers was actually pretty decent, because again, the Oilers weren't viewed as a cup contender when he took them over. He was actually kind of the one that helped them take that step from, okay, they're a team that makes the playoffs but gets bounced around one, to okay, they're winning playoff rounds. And then it just ended really poorly for him last season. So among the experienced guys, who again, I'm not a huge fan of a lot of the names available, he does definitely stand out to me as an intriguing option.
Yeah, I guess, the thing that I remember most about how it ended for Woodcroft is just how poorly Edmonton was defending at that time. And he tried to make some changes in the way that to their system, and I think the players didn't really just buy into it for whatever reason. But you hope, like, with a coach like that, they learn from their mistakes, and ultimately, like, so much of this is going to come down to how they fix the roster, because yeah, the personnel is not like the lack of offense and the way that this team is structured, the way that the team has been built through the years, it's like they can have some offense, but then the defense goes, or they have pretty good defense, but then they really struggle to generate offense. They're not a team that's able to do both simultaneously.
And they need better players.
That's ultimately what it comes down to. It's a personnel issue. And I don't know how you get the 2 to 3 forwards that you need in here to really be able to build that kind of a team in one offseason.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I'm curious what you guys think as well, but when I look at how many coaches can make a material, sizable, huge impact on a team's results,
yeah,
I think there's only a select number of head coaches in that sort of tier.
Well, like Tockett kind of had it, like when he first came here, just how stark the difference was defensively for the team, at least.
Yeah, and ultimately, though, when I look around the NHL, I'd argue there are less than 10 coaches who can sort of take any type of middling roster and really help them elevate and get to the next level. After that, I think it's, you know, coaching matters, but there's only so much juice you can squeeze out of, you know, a specific roster type. And honestly, that's, I think, a large part of the reason why there's always such a huge turnover rate in terms of NHL head coaching tenures. It feels like they're getting shorter and shorter. Mm-hmm. I think I read the other day that before Tockett left, he had already become the 10th longest tenured active head coach with Vancouver. I think the average tenure these days is around 2 years. The reason teams are going through so many coaches, in my opinion, is partially because there are only a few elite level coaches that can actually garner, like, help a team get to the next level. And so what happens is teams will have disappointing seasons, and the coach is a lot easier to replace than it is to remake the roster. And the coach is often made out to be either the scapegoat, or you're hoping to get a bit of a different spark. When in reality, coaching can sort of only take you so far. And ultimately, when I look at the available head coaches right now, there isn't a guy that stands out as far as, oh, he's the perfect fit, he's going to come in and he's going to do an unbelievable job with this group. So the responsibility falls on this management group in terms of, you're going to have to do a lot of heavy lifting to meaningfully improve the personnel.
Yeah, and I mean, and Rutherford said today Mike Sullivan doesn't want to leave the East, so he's a guy that could do that, but he's not coming here. And, you know, Joel Quenneville, his name is back out there again. He might end up in Anaheim, or he may end up somewhere else. But
yeah, it's not going to work in Vancouver.
And I don't see him wanting to come to the Canadian market anyways, right? Yeah. Like, is that the market you want to come back to the league in, right? But and then you have questions about, he hasn't been in the league a few years. Where is that going to be at? And John Cooper, I think we'd all love to see it, but he has to get fired first, and then the Canucks have to pony up to pay him. These are all pipe dreams. They're not happening, right? Or they're not realistic. So if you're looking at finding a difference maker, taking a swing, does a swing just come down to Manny then, and hoping that he becomes one of those coaches, and that's your highest upside bet?
That's kind of what I'm leaning towards. I found it interesting that Rutherford, in today's press conference, he was asked a question by Moj around this idea of how much does previous head coaching experience at the NHL level matter in terms of your next coaching hire. And Rutherford didn't want to commit one way or the other, but sounded legitimately open-minded and pointed out that, hey, there are head coaches in the league right now who are having a lot of success with their teams that are first-time NHL head coaches. And his point is true. You know, Spencer Carberry, he had 3 years in the AHL. He was assistant with Toronto, but out in Washington, that was his first time as a full-time, as a head coach in the NHL. John Cooper, when he originally got hired by Tampa, he had 3 years of head coaching experience in the American League. He didn't even have experience as an assistant at the NHL level, which Manny does. And we know what he's done over in Tampa. Marty St. Louis had, like, really no coaching experience at all at the professional level, instantly became Habs head coach. And has done a remarkable job of developing young players and turning that Habs team around. Rod Brind'Amour had very little experience coaching before he was hired as a head coach. And so, yeah, I mean, when you combine that with the work Manny has done in Abbotsford, how many of the Abbotsford call-ups looked ready to play at the NHL level, how much success that team has had despite his roster being impacted by all of the injuries at the NHL level and him losing players up to Vancouver and still having a ton of success down the stretch. He's done everything he could have asked for at the AHL level this year. Is it a bit of a risk because as a pure head coach, he only has 1 year of experience at the pro level? A little bit, but he has a long track record of in a couple spots of sort of being an assistant. He also has some familiarity here, obviously, where you can turn to Quinn, and Manny was here in the 1920 season, which was Quinn's rookie campaign. So Hughes will have some level of understanding of what Manny is like, and you can get Quinn's input on whether he buys into and believes in the idea of Manny. So yeah, is there some risk considering the lack of experience? Sure, but it's probably an upside bet I'd be willing to make because I don't love the alternative option since Mike Sullivan is obviously off the table. And even just a couple conversations I've had with him, he's sharp. He's a great communicator. His knowledge of the game is incredible. I wouldn't mind them taking a swing at Manny as their head coach.
Harm, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks for this.
Thanks, guys.
There he is, Harmon Dial of The Athletic, joining us here on Canucks Central. And Manny Malhotra seems to be a name that's going to be talked about quite a bit after Jim Rutherford confirmed he would be on the short list. And you know, the thing that stood out was when he talked about hiring Mike Sullivan to take over the Penguins, and he mentioned how Sullivan came to him and was like, we should bring up these few guys from the AHL. I think they're ready. And, you know, lo and behold, they went on to win the Stanley Cup. Now, do the Canucks have those guys in the AHL? They've got some exciting, intriguing players. We've seen a lot of them already, though, and they have looked like they can play a role, but Canucks still missing impact players more than anything on their roster.
They are. And I think as far as the coach goes, and I can understand the desire to get a veteran head coach, but the job is to get the best possible hire.
Yeah.
And to that point, do you view a guy like Woodcroft as a guy that can go to a second job and become one, a really big time head coach? Do you think a guy like Laviolette can rediscover some magic?
Yeah.
Who's more experienced, right? I think those are the veterans you can look at.
Laviolette is just, seems like a short term fix.
Yeah, I agree. He always is. He's a guy that doesn't last very long.
Yeah.
He has success early or no success at all. You saw what happened with the Rangers. Good one last year and then this
year. President's Trophy last year completely fell off the map this year.
Yeah. And usually it takes 3 years, but it happened after 1 year for him this time around. So I think guys like that you can look at, but I'm not as enamored with it. You know, Jordan texted in about Jeff Halpern, who we brought up earlier in the show. He's an assistant. So there are a couple, like, it doesn't have to be Manny, but I'm not against hiring a first-time head coach here because of the field and who's available. And the guys that have the acumen are not coming here.
Yeah. Rafe asking about Adam Foote and Sergei Gonchar. I mean, I don't know Gonchar's situation explicitly, but he's only been a part-time guy here in Vancouver, and it seemed like, you know, that was something that they were struggling with, given Tockett's comments at the end of the season. Foote has a pretty remarkable reputation, though, from the players and how, you know, just look at some of the how he's coached up some of the defensemen through the last couple of years with the Canucks.
Yeah, they love him.
Yeah,
right. So I think, but like Rutherford said, they have to kind of let it play out a little bit here.
Yeah.
And it does not sound like there are options for head coach.
Mm-hmm. He also mentioned, I think Rick Dhaliwal reported that Foote is out of contract as well. So he would be able to go along with Tockett, should he so choose, or maybe be an option as a head coach, should the Canucks want to explore that. But he could be a name on the list if the Canucks go down that road, but they're still very much in the early stages of that, as Jim Rutherford alluded to today.
No, for sure. I get it. And I get people are upset. Like, we're bringing names up, and Rusty on Twitter is like, don't bring up Woodcroft. Stop talking about him. Can't control. Fair, but we're talking about options that are available, right? And these are the guys you have to look at. And if you're looking at hiring coaches, especially giving guys a second chance, the first chance sometimes doesn't work out. And if you look at a lot of coaches, they had some failures early. It's hard to find the guys that come in right away and have success.
Yeah.
Like Mike Sullivan, he had some experience before.
Yeah.
And he finally got a shot and look how it worked out. And I remember when he was hired initially, people were like, Mike Sullivan?
Yeah.
He's him?
Really? That guy? But the Penguins at the time were having success with their AHL team. He was obviously an assistant with Torts' staff here in Vancouver as well. Had been an assistant for many years. And like Manny's been an assistant for a while too, right? Yeah. He was an assistant here in Vancouver. Then he went to Toronto. Then he's come here to take on the AHL gig. So he's been on the path towards a head coaching gig. It's just... You know, has he earned that opportunity already, or does he still need a little bit more time in the lower ranks?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the other guy we mentioned, you know, when Harm was on, Joel Quenneville's name is out there. And Frank mentioned to us yesterday that he is going to land back in the National Hockey League, whether it's Anaheim or elsewhere. Yeah. And if you look at his coaching record, mm-hmm. I mean, it's exemplary, right?
Yes.
But you go back to how he handled that whole situation with the Blackhawks, the reason why he got let go to begin with and why he was out of the league to begin with for a few years. Obviously, you can draw a moral line here. But whether you like it or not, to me, it's not realistic.
Yeah.
And I think you've made this point too. Forget whether the Canucks are interested or not. Would he be interested even?
Honestly, man, like I can't imagine a coach with that history. Like it's probably just best for you to avoid a Canadian market and certainly...
Or like any Vancouver. Hot market, right?
Any hot market.
Like Anaheim, people are going to leave him alone.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of the perfect landing spot,
He's not
right?
going to get a ton of questions.
Maybe initially, because you know, it's a big story. Like maybe it'll happen initially,
I mean, Bowman took the job in Edmonton.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, maybe I'm wrong on this. But, you know, it was a story at first and then it's kind of calmed down and it's... Not great what happened with those guys, obviously, but they've gone through the program enough and they've done enough for the NHL to say that they're ready to have a chance at getting back into the league.
Yeah.
And teams aren't going to stop themselves from hiring guys that have, you know, cup winning track records. Mm-hmm. So I don't think you can avoid it, whether it's Vancouver or elsewhere, but I just... Just probably not a great landing spot for your first landing spot after all of that.
No. And you know, somebody texted him, what about Mike Babcock? Well, I think the Babcock ship may have sailed forever.
I think that one's happened a few too many times given Mike Babcock's history. All right, coming back, we'll get more into your Canucks and maybe check in on this Leafs-Senators game. Sens are up 1-0 in the second period of play. Elsewhere, the Devils... trying to stave off elimination themselves. They've got a 3-0 lead after one period of play against the Carolina Hurricanes. Stan Riccio, Satyar Shah, you are listening to Canuck Central.